to order. Is she ready? Okay. Call the Education Committee to order. Presents are Senator Huggins and myself, Betty Davis. We have one bill to come before us today. We will not take any action on the bill, but we will hear the bill, take public testimony if there's anybody to testify. If you do have cell phone, you do need to cut those off. And I'll ask Senator Passman to come up and give us the information on 134.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Senator Passman from Fairbanks, and pleased to present to this committee the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. And if I could just read a little bit into the record so that the committee understands what this will provide to Alaska. It will bring Alaska's guidance and requirements for the administration of endowments and charitable funds up to date and consistent with national standards. This act attempts to bring all of the various types of nonprofit organizations and governmental entities under the same requirements and standards for administration of endowments and charitable funds. This act is default legislation, which applies only in the absence of other more specific applicable requirements in law or governing instruments. And for example, this does not apply to the permanent fund because a permanent fund has written into its act specific investment standards. It's called UPMIFA, and it replaces obscure and obsolete rules and concepts for the investment and management of endowments and charitable funds with current industry best practices. UPMIFA provides clear guidance on the standards of performance and prudent practices for the investment and management of endowments and charitable funds consistent with the Uniform Prudent Investment Act adopted by Alaska 10 years ago in 1998. UPMIFA defines specific factors to be considered in managing charitable funds, such as the accumulation of earnings, the expenditure of endowment funds, and the obligation to provide for future beneficiaries. The investment of funds, including the obligation to manage to the overall objective of the funds in the portfolio, to consider the investment horizon, cost of management, diversification, rebalancing, verification of relevant facts, and use of special skills or expertise that a fiduciary possesses, and the prudent delegation of investment and management functions. UPMIFA minimizes the exposure of nonprofits and volunteer trustees to disputes and legal challenges over issues related to obscure and outdated administrative rules and practices by clarifying the specific requirements and the applicable performance standards. UPMIFA incorporates a less onerous and less expensive process for the modification or release of donor restrictions on gifts that may have become wasteful, impracticable, unlawful, or impossible to achieve. And just as I was indicating to Senator Huggins before we were coming in here, I've sat on a finance board for almost 20 years now, and so these are some of the, as a volunteer, and these are some of the, I think, investment standards that are important to bring Alaska's investment standards up to national standards. So.
All right. We thank you very much for that overview. Any questions at this time? I also have a couple people online off-site. We'll get with them later. Yes. Senator Huggins?
A couple questions, yes. Senator Passman, you mentioned specifically the permanent fund. Are there any other organizations or entities?
Not specifically that would not be included within this. I believe that this is really, if, for example, you've set up a private trust and included in there, I don't know that this would necessarily apply to that, but there may be some individuals that can speak specifically to which institutional types of funds that this applies to and which it does not. But.
Let me continue.
Yeah, thank you. And the other one, just for conversation's sake, are there any concerns you've heard or any concerns you have that, that potential unintended consequences of doing this come to mind?
No, I believe that this is a step in the right direction to address the issues, for example, that voluntary trustees that are making decisions on these institutional funds, that this will provide better understanding of prudent investment practices, and that this will be, I do not believe it will have unintended consequences.
Thank you. And if
you
I
may continue.
One additional question. This will not require a staff of three or more lawyers to administer.
The point of this is to not have that happen, I believe, is the...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, you're welcome. And we do have the attached fiscal note that just got here this morning. We have on off-site James Lynch and Eric Warford, and they want to speak to this. They are with the University Foundation. Are you online there?
Yes, this is Jim Lynch, and I'm here.
Did you plan to testify?
Yes, to testify.
Yes, you may at this time.
So you may testify.
Okay. All right, this is Jim Lynch. I'm Associate Vice President for Finance for the University of Alaska, and I've been managing the university's endowments for the last 25 years or so. And I wanted to testify in support of the SB 134. It's really represents guidelines for the administration of charitable funds and endowments. It was approved by the Uniform Law Commission in 2006, and I'm assuming that you know what the Uniform Law Commission is. Deborah Barramay from the AG's office may be at the meeting. I don't know if she is or not, but she is a member of the committee, at any rate, or the commission. But anyway, it was approved in 2006. Over the next 2 years, it was adopted by 26 states and the District of Columbia. In 2009, it was adopted by three more states. And bills were introduced to implement MIFA in 14 other states. It's been being adopted fairly rapidly across the country, and there's really two reasons for that, I think. One of those is that this is really, for most states, an update of prior legislation, prior uniform legislation that came out in the early 1970s. And most of the states have operated under standards very similar to these for the last, 30 or 40 years. Alaska had never adopted the original Uniform Management Act. But at any rate, the other reason it's being adopted so readily is it provides a lot of flexibility for those that manage endowments and charitable funds during the economic turmoil and market downturns. In my opinion, this bill was actually, this update was developed because of confusion that arose back in 2001 and 2002 when we had the last market decline and the bursting of the tech bubble. But at any rate, the act actually is a compilation of best practices for administration of charitable funds and endowments. It protects donors and by making donors' intent paramount in determining what can and should happen to donations and endowments. It authorizes things like the total return concept, which allows managers of endowments to utilize current investment techniques and strategies. Otherwise, you wind up with a lot of fixed income investments, trying to produce income, and there's almost no way investing in fixed income that you can inflation-proof a fund. So it also provides the charitable organizations with the flexibility they need in these economic times to deal with market conditions. When you manage an endowment, you really have three objectives. And the first one is to maximize the returns. You really can't do much with an endowment unless you make some money off of it to spend. And the next objective is you're really trying to inflation-proof the fund so that you retain the purchasing power. When these endowments are used, like particularly at the university, for supporting a faculty member's salary or a scholarship, well, the cost of that scholarship or faculty member's salary is going up annually. And you need some way to continue that funding. So what you really have to do is inflation-proof the fund so that the spending continues to increase also. And then the other thing you're trying to do when you manage that fund is stabilize distributions. It's not of much value to find out that the investment market is down this year, but the student still has his tuition to pay and his room and board and that sort of stuff. And if you've given them a scholarship, they still need that money. And the same is true of the faculty member's salary. They're still teaching and they still have to get paid. So stabilization of the distribution is probably one of the most important things you have, but you have to make money first. At any rate, the Act protects the nonprofit community and the many volunteers that they have that serve on boards, and it protects them from the failure to follow what we have now is really outdated and obscure rules and practices regarding how do you manage these funds.
Are you completed?
No, actually it does a number of other smaller things, too, that are important for administration of funds, but they're not as important as the ones I've identified. There are two sections tacked onto the back of that bill that relate exclusively to the university, and those are there to, one, make sure that this act does apply to the university, and secondly, it's there to correct an unintended, what I believe is an unintended consequence that occurred during the implementation or during the establishment of the Retirement Management Board. The authority for the Board of Regents to manage its endowments and so forth, and the land grant trust fund basically came through a statutory reference in the university statutes to the Alaska Pension Board, and it was AS 1425-180 was the original reference, and it dealt with some of the fiduciary duties of the pension board and applied those to the university. It also indicated that AS 3710071, which is the fiduciary responsibilities for state funds, it also provided that statute applies to the Board of Regents also. And when we dropped that, when we changed that reference to the Retirement Management Board, it put in a bunch of provisions for the Retirement Management Board that relate to managing pensions and don't apply to endowments at all. And it's not quite so clear as to whether the other state statute on fiduciary responsibilities does apply. And this basically corrects that situation. That pretty much ends my comments, but I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone may have.
This is Eric Wolforth, Mr. Chairman, as well, to testify.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wolford. I have one question I want to ask the Mr. Lynch, did you hear the line of question that Senator Huggins asked the last person?
We could not hear what was taking place before I started my conversation.
All right. Well, we have someone else that we could ask that question of. All right, Mr. Warford.
Yes, I just would supplement what Mr. Lynch said very briefly. I'm the chair of the University Investment Committee. This bill would apply in a case where the trust instrument is silent as to the terms of management and the provisions for payouts. In other words, the typical, for example, gift to the university establishing a scholarship fund is silent on such things as what the payout can be for the scholarship. Trust law, as it now exists in Alaska, says, well, you can't go below the original cost of that fund. So a great many university scholarships this year will not have a payout. This bill applies in all cases where the original gift instrument is silent and says that you can have a payout, which is a percent of market value. Excuse me. I think that's an important point. In other words, it's default legislation. It applies where the gift instrument or the trust instrument is silent and does not specify otherwise. Where a trust instrument specifies the amount of payout or has other provisions, that document would prevail, and this law would not apply. The other thing specifically to mention is that it gives portfolio managers freedom, essential freedom in the kind of assets that may be invested in the portfolio according to very elaborated rules relating to prudence and the like. It does not attempt to specify what sort of investments are legally required. I would say the default nature of the legislation, the fact that it applies where the instrument is silent, is important, as well as the broader authority on investments than previously existed. Those are my comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, question.
Yes, there's a question from Senator Huggins.
Mr. Warforth, Charlie Huggins from Wasilla. I got a little confused when you were talking about, and I will use the term endowment and principal, the original investment, I believe the way you characterize it.
This, I had a little trouble hearing that, but I think your question is the distinction between...
No, stand by one. I haven't completed the question yet. Sorry about the volume. The question is, does this legislation, as you were characterizing, does it allow your investment organization, in this case paying out scholarships, to be able to dip into the principal versus when it was silent before, without this legislation, that you could not do that?
That is correct. What it does is it, the original bill for the Uniform Management of Institutional Funds Act in 1970 basically said you could distribute current income or yield, and you could distribute capital appreciation, MIFA does, the updated version, is it says you can distribute any money in the endowment, and effectively what you're doing, if you distribute more than the original gift value, if the value of the endowment drops below the original gift value, then you can continue to make distributions, but you have a responsibility to inflation-proof that fund, and you can't get very deep in it. What you're really doing is making an advance against future income, and it allows you to do that, but you can't get very deep in that and still be prudent. So there's a whole host of considerations that you basically have to justify in order to do that. And you have to take into consideration general economic conditions, the effect of inflation, expected tax consequences, the role of the investment itself within the portfolio, the expected total return, the resources of the other resources of the institution, the needs of the institution, the requirement to preserve capital, and special relationships that assets may have to the portfolio. There's just a whole host of requirements out there if you're going to try and get into this arena. And that's what it does, is it allows the flexibility, but they're all governed by what's prudent. I don't know if that answers the question, but I hope it does.
Well, it does to some degree, Madam Chair.
You may.
But I guess my concern, Mr. Wolforth, is, you know, our present national and international debacle that's kind of stretched across the globe, where, you know, the economic paradigm that most of us have lived by has sort of been thrown out the window. And I just use the permanent fund as an example. I know it doesn't apply to the permanent fund, but permanent fund used to be worth $40 billion. It's now worth 26 something. And according to which side of the fence you sit on, some people says you can't pay a dividend. Other people say you must pay a dividend. And I just use that as a basis of comparison, and some people are alarmed by that conversation. And I guess just as an average citizen does not sit on such a board to give, quote, the same sort of flexibility we did on subprime mortgages to investment in paying out endowments concerns me a little bit, though I may not fully understand the implications as you described them. Thank you.
Well, if I may, as you've said, Senator, this is a period, an unprecedented period, where a whole new paradigm of investment is slowly emerging, and we don't know what the shape of it's going to be, except that we know that the hugely unfortunate practices that have developed are going to be behind us. But this legislation, sort of in general, doesn't tie us to any particular era or time in terms of what's an appropriate payout rule. Up until 1970, everybody said, well, if you're a trustee, invest in bonds and fixed income and pay out interest, period. And as you well know, since that time, a total return concept has come into play, which says that, well, we're going to be investing in common stock as well as bonds. And that notion of total return became the accepted investment tool, and in fact is part of this legislation. What's happened in the last year and a half has thrown almost every calculation out of kilter. I don't think it has thrown the total return notion out of kilter, but I certainly agree with your premise that it's a whole new investment world. What that says to me is flexibility is necessary as a new paradigm develops, and people can in a year or two begin to take a better line sight on what the investment philosophy ought to be going forward.
But yep. The record, do you tell me if that's Mr. Lynch speaking, or was that Wolf?
That was Eric Wolforth. I'm okay. Sorry, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. And Mr. Senator Huggins would like to continue with his line of questions.
Yeah, Mr. Wolford, and I appreciate and thank you very much for your testimony. And don't take anything that I'm saying or any questions I have from a position of authority on the subject as one of concern. And, you know, to be quite frank, it appears to me at the national level, you mentioned the term increasing flexibility, and it appears that the prevailing thought is decreasing flexibility and having more regulation. So would you just address that very quickly?
Sure. The more regulation of financial institutions and eliminating these bizarre instruments that developed and have developed, I don't think at the trustee level, in endowment level, those same considerations of decreasing flexibility are really bite. I think there we're talking about the ability to calibrate what investment policy needs to be in various environments, and as this legislation says, don't don't tie us to a return environment which is essentially based on 100% fixed income, but let us have the flexibility to operate in different environments, but not as a prudent steward of funds, obviously get into the bizarre sorts of instruments that were developed on Wall Street, which it seems to me hopefully no trustee in his or her right mind would invest in.
This is Jim Lynch, and if I could add a comment, as I indicated earlier, one of the reasons that MIFA was developed is because of the downturn in the market in 2001 and 2002. And what happened during that period is boards and institutions made all sorts of erratic decisions as to what to do. And what they did, what some of them did was looked at their whole pool of endowments. They take the university. We have approximately 600 endowments. And I can tell you that there are accumulated earnings over those collectively, but we probably have 250 of those endowments that today that are underwater. They have no more accumulated earnings. So there won't be any distributions from those.
For scholarships.
For scholarships and that sort of thing. So, what this bill did was it took people that were, some were pooling them and making distributions, some just went ahead and made distributions anyway. It's like having a sick kid at home. When you have to spend your money, you spend your money for whatever it has to be spent on. And so there's a lot of variety in terms of what people did, and others went through, extreme pain when they didn't spend any of their endowment. So the idea here is to find some happy medium and do it based on your judgment as to what's happening in the economy and what your other sources of funds are within the institution. And that really can't be legislated. What you can give them is the standards to go by and the principles. And then you have to really trust the trustees, that's what they're there for, to make prudent decisions. But you basically cannot meet the objectives of the law here, as it's written in this bill, by spending principles. You can borrow against it, but you can't spend it, essentially, and your borrowing has to be judged based on the circumstances surrounding it.
Thank you very much.
That's all I had to say at this point.
Senator Huggins, do you have further questions?
I just a comment, and I say thanks to each of you gentlemen for testifying today, and the structure, as I understand it, and I've talked to Senator Pascavan, I think at this point in time I support. You just, it's kind of like the red-headed prairie dog when you're out varmint hunting. I saw a red-headed prairie dog's head when you said we can pay out of the principal, and that sort of concerned me a little bit, and that was the extent of my concern. Beyond that, it appears to be rational and prudent and an improvement upon the process we have today. Thank you.
You're welcome. We do have someone from the Department of Law. Lynn Levenwood?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
And I'm Ms. Betty Davis. Yes, I do hear you.
This is Attorney Lynn Levenwood. I'm a Uniform Law Commissioner for the State of Alaska, and I'd like to testify briefly concerning Senate Bill 134.
Please do that.
I am speaking on it. I'm not at the LIO office, and I apologize, and I may not have the most current version of this bill, but the Uniform Law Commission, the Alaska Law Commission, we provided the legislation to the national body to make sure it would still qualify as a uniform law because there were some minor changes that were made that were unique to Alaska that we had looked at, and our national governing body came back and indicated that the changes were not substantial and that they were the piece of legislation would still qualify as a uniform state law. However, there was one, I guess, language issue that they think should be corrected. And again, it may have been corrected because I'm not sure which is the most latest version. But
this, the original bill is the latest version.
Okay. the title of the bill is that this is a Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. And the key word there is institutional funds. And that is a term that's broader than the term endowment. And if you'll, on page, well, I can't go to page number, under section 1370090, definitions, definition number two is the definition of endowment fund, which means an institutional fund or part of an institutional fund. So the term endowment is narrower or smaller than the term institutional fund. And so the hiccup that we saw in the language is at the very last paragraph of the bill under applicability, where the paragraph starting that starts out applicability, AS 1370 is enacted by Section 1 of this Act, applies to an endowment fund held by an institution. We believe that that word endowment fund should be changed to institutional fund because the institutional fund is broader in scope, and it was consistent with the title of the bill and the focus of the bill on to be as broad as institute to govern the management of institutional funds, whereas under applicability, if we leave the word endowment fund in the first sentence there, it may cause confusion and be interpreted as the law being narrower than institutional funds in general. So that's all that the National Commission or the Alaska Commission, Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, have found. We favor the legislation and ask that it be supported and passed.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Senator Huggins?
No, thank you.
Okay, if that completes your testimony, we do have one person in the audience to testify on this bill. You want to come forward and state your name for the record? Who do you represent?
Thank you, Senator Davis, Senator Huggins. Good morning. My name's Ken Kastner. I serve as a fiduciary on a couple of community foundation boards. I'm also active in the investment committees of both of those boards. I really want to simplify this for you. What this bill does primarily is give the Attorney General very specific authority to act that is absent today. The problem that arose prior to UMIFA, the preceding act, was that a donor may give a bequest to a university to have an endowment for a chair of philosophy, and then the chair would never be funded or partially funded, and the money would go elsewhere, and the donors would just be completely frustrated because they had very limited means to go after the university and assert the intent of the original gift. So what this does is give the Alaska Attorney General very specific authority to act and to intercede to make sure that that these things are followed. All the other little stuff that's in here, the things that you were concerned about, Senator Huggins, this is, to me, it's a belt and suspenders thing because we're already acting under other national standards in order to be prudent. And what is prudent in 2009 is different than what was prudent in 2005. In the 20 years I've been involved in philanthropy, it's been all over the place on what your balance should be between equities and bonds, fixed income and earnings. So I support this bill. I don't want you to get red herrings, you know, and get drug away on some things that are tough things. An endowment is in perpetuity, and so you don't want to have a sinking fund. You want to structure it in such a way that it's not. Personally, I'm not a big fan of percent of market value or where we take everything and mix it together and say we're going to give out 4.5%. It's a very simple concept when you say you will take the earnings, whatever the corpus is, it goes up and down like an elevator, you take the earnings and you distribute them, whatever they may be. We get into total return concepts, and it becomes a much cloudier issue. But that's just me personally, and I fight on a board level and an investment committee level to make sure that we reach that balance, that we don't have a sinking fund, and that we achieve a public purpose of scholarship or charitable support. And because that's basically, this is all derived out of federal tax law. There was a federal tax deduction for the gift. We're allowed as charitable institutions to operate tax exempt, and so there has to be a public purpose that continues with that. And I hope that in simplifying it, I've helped.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Very enlightening. We have no other persons to testify. Is there anybody else off-site? Hearing none, I'll close public testimony at this time. I'd like for the sponsor of the bill to come back, please. There was only one suggested amendment, and it's on the applicability of the bill, the last page, last paragraph. And if I don't see the need to have to do a new CS just to change that, we could just have an amendment, if you agree to that, to put charitable
endowment
rather than endowment fund. Are you there? The last paragraph?
Yes, I am on page 8, and that is Mr. Levengood's suggestion to make sure that it's as broad as possible.
Yes.
And
do you agree to that and want to follow that direction?
I think that the intent is that that this act would broadly apply, and to the extent that under the Uniform Law Act makes it more clear, I would be in favor of that then.
All right. So we could do that in a form of amendment, and we would not have to change to a new CS from education. If you'd like to make that amendment and have it ready when we bring the bill back the next time, because we don't have people to take action on it today.
Okay.
Is that agreeable?
That's agreeable, Madam Chair.
Any comments from you, Senator Huggins?
No, I have one question on the title after we complete this portion.
We can go there.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And it just for professional broadening for me, Senator Pascavan, and it says, and relating to the University of Alaska. We go through all the title, and why do we have to say, and relating to the University of Alaska?
I saw that.
It, Mr. Lynch testified as to where they're amending the statutes that apply to the Board of Regents, and so that he is investing funds on behalf of the university, where they're saying that it applies specifically to this is on page 7 of the draft, where it says, in carrying out its management and investment responsibilities under this subsection, the Board of Regents has the same powers and duties with respect to gifts and bequests and endowments of the university. And then they're required under, and then they apply to the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional. So they're making it so that it's very clear that it's applicable to the university endowment.
Okay.
That's why,
right.
So that it's very clear that they can distribute monies for scholarships, even if the principal, if they determine it's prudent to do so.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. That completes everything then, and if there's nothing else to come before us, we can adjourn at 9:20. Thank you very much.
Thank